Welcome, everyone, to this week's weekly market update, February 5th, about an hour post equity market open. Doing this a little bit early with myself and Carl. How are you?
I am doing just well today, Scott. Yourself?
I am doing well. Obviously, we've had some pretty newsworthy events since last podcast. So we're going to start this one off a little differently and go ahead and jump into Carl's corner.
Last Friday, as many listeners probably saw, the administration has a new appointee for the federal chair who will take over for Jerome Powell in May. This man's name is Kevin Warsh. A little background on Mr. Warsh was he was a Fed governor in the early 2000s for about 5 years there. He is very dovish when it comes to rate cuts, just along with the administration, which is why he's getting the tap on the shoulder, so to speak. But he's still very data dependent. He is not just someone who's going to cut rates immediately and all as far down as anyone tells him to. He's a very independent thinker, which is something that Scott and I really like to see because, as we've been discussing, if you come down on interest rates too fast, inflation is going to creep its head, and now we're back in a whole different problem. So it's great to see that he's his own independent thinker, still very data driven, but is also more dovish than Jerome Powell. And I think that's going to really start to lean into the future rate cuts on the year, which, as we were discussing last week, about 2 to 3. And the probability is now showing 2 to 3, but leaning towards the 3 end, Scott, which is exactly what you were thinking last week.
Yeah, I just had this feeling that we're going to have a similar situation as 2025, where we're going to have kind of a late year, I guess what some would consider to be a surprise cut, but obviously we'll know it in advance. Yeah, I'll tell you what I think. I wasn't really planning on going into this on this podcast, but, and I'm not sure this is something we've talked about actually, but one thing about Warsh that's different than Powell, in my opinion. Powell had a bit of uncertainty about him for this reason. Now, we correctly identified every single pause or rate cut all throughout 25. But what was uncertain about Powell was the post-conference. So he could, in a span of an hour, cut rates and then talk about how inflation was out of control, essentially. So he had this unique ability to talk out of both sides of his mouth. I believe that Warsh is going to be a lot more predictable, and I think he's proven that in the past, to your point of having served before as a governor. But I think he's gonna add a layer of predictability or certainty, and that is the market's best friend. Certainty is the market's absolute best friend. And so I think that's one benefit alongside of the rate cuts. So two benefits that we're going to get out of the Fed in 2026. Now, what the timing of that is going to be, is a little bit uncertain right now. But I'm glad you pointed out the 2 to 3, and it looks like maybe heavy on 3, which to me, it makes a lot of sense for market reasons. It also makes, there's always politics involved, and that will be part of that as well. But I personally am excited about it just purely because of the market reaction that is very, very likely to be on the back end of this new Fed policy.
And one thing I just want to mention is the probabilities are leaning 2 to 3, leaning towards 3 rate cuts. Now, the individual actual meeting dates of those cuts are very much in the air. It could happen the first one after he gets appointed, or we could have it exactly what happened last year, which is the last 3, you get 3 straight rate cuts. Until we find out
That's
exactly how Warsh
what I'm kind of
views
think.
it,
That's what I'm kind of thinking is going to happen.
it makes the most logical sense that he's not going to want to immediately hop in, immediately start cutting rates without having or utilizing new data as the Fed chair, right? He may not do it right away. He may want to hold it. And I think, honestly, the best way for him would be at least wait one. And if he wants to do a cut and then wait a cut and then finish it off at the last 2 of the year, that would be, I think, a really good way of doing it. And I think that's going to be something that's going to give confidence to the market. So his certainty as well as his confidence in the market. I think that's going to play well to drive through the end of 2026.
Yeah, I agree. I think what makes most sense is that he wait a couple of meets, and that's going to assure everyone that there still remains independence out of the Fed, and then see kind of similar to what we saw in 2025, multiple back-to-back rate cuts. And so the one downside to that is the whole real estate market is waiting, anticipating on slightly lower rates. Three rate cuts gets real estate moving at a good clip from where we are today. But I did want to jump into, and obviously everything is interwoven, right? So you'll hear us talk about certain sectors, even if we're invested in it or not, because they're all interwoven and they push together sometimes, and sometimes they push and pull. So right now, what we're seeing is a push and pull. And for an example, our portfolios are benefiting from this dispersion that you've heard us talk about for weeks now. And it's moving into dividend paying sectors, which we're well positioned in. It's moving into small cap, which you've heard us talk about for probably a year now. It's moving into something that we included not too terribly long ago, which is international. So if you look at the small cap, Russell up 5% year to date, international up 5.5% year to date, while the S&P is down 1.8, and the equal weight is essentially break even, right? So we were looking at our moderate growth model, which is basically our most aggressive, and it's actually up 1.8% year to date. And it's because we have those certain sectors. Now, I will say that earnings have a lot to do with this, at least this most recent, couple of weeks of market volatility that we've seen, if you want to call it that. But I found this to be an interesting stat, Carl. 76% of the first 76 stocks to report earnings beat their estimates. So that's pretty important. 70% beat top line sales, and the average price change was positive 0.3. And the reason for that is that's a lot of those dividend paying large cap stocks, which we own a lot of. And so I'm real excited about the composition of our portfolio right now, because I think we timed it really well to of course we wanted to have the interest rate sensitive sectors, and we do have some of that tech. But we lighten up on that in order to be able to go to international and also to participate in financials and real estate for that matter. So all of these will be, well, and small caps will be beneficiaries at some point during the year when we do start seeing this, what I believe will be consecutive rate cuts.
And I want to piggyback and go a little bit more detail about the earnings and the volatility therefore after. Because you're right, every single one of these big companies, the Magnificent Seven, have all beat earnings. Every single one of them have beat earnings, yet all of them are, as you'd say it, taking it on the chin right now with some short-term volatility, which in their turn is bringing down the S&P and bringing down the NASDAQ, the ones that are heavily weighted in these Magnificent Seven holdings. And the reason, or one of the reasons why they're getting a little bit of the sell-off is, A, they're rotating out into a more breadth option throughout the market, right? We needed to bring back into consumer staples, consumer discretionary, utilities, metals, building. All those are really is where all the money's being fed into, as well as international. Because if you look at last year, how many times last year we say Magnificent Seven is running the market, which it did, and we needed this. We needed this slight pullback, slight correction to be able to spread the wealth to the rest of these industries and these sectors. And that's exactly what's happening. There's nothing at all wrong with all these companies that are at the top, the NVIDIAs, the Apples, the Microsofts, all of those. It's the fact that they were so concentrated last year that they needed to be dispersed out. And that's what we're seeing at the beginning of 2026.
Yes, very good point. And one other thing too that we had not really planned on talking about today, but I'm just sitting here thinking about the interest rates and the real estate market. and how that translates really into the broad market. But one of the sectors that we identified yesterday during our investment committee that I find to be very interesting that you might see us actually move a little heavier into is the materials, right? And those tend to be front runners of the actual, real estate builders, all of that. And so that's something to keep an eye on as well.
Yes, I think that's going to be something absolutely we want to add more into. If you look at it right now, software is the one that's getting hurt the most, which is the Microsoft's. And I think being able to take some out of the software possibly into builders, which is, as you said, is a leading indicator, especially in real estate and in overall market health,
Well,
I
true,
think
yeah.
is something that is that our listeners and our clients can see on the horizon.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's all converging together really in a very precise window. Now, we don't know yet exactly which meets are going to result in rate cuts, but we will know very soon and we'll know ahead of the actual announcements. But I think we are working with a relatively tight window, which is good. That means predictability. And we're positioned for that very well. And so I'm just extremely excited about how we are how our portfolio construction is set and ready to really have a big year, in my opinion. And we've looked at all the stats, we've talked about all the stats, we've compared it to 2019. We also Carl talked about 2012 could be a good blueprint, and so everything is kind of lining up the way that we want it to.
Yeah, 2012, I found very interesting. There's a lot of macroeconomics in play this year as there were in 2012. The only thing that wasn't happening was rate cuts because rates were already at the bottom. But there's a lot of similarities in 2012 as well, which is another really good year for the market. So we're kind of using both 2019 and 2012 as a blueprint going forward.
Which I think is great. And we've talked, I don't know if we've done this on the podcast, but if you ever were curious to know why those blueprints make so much sense, compare 2012 to 2019 or compare 2022 to 2018. And you'll see why those blueprints are so important, which is why we're leaning very heavily on 19 and 12 for 2026. So again, all of this stuff works in tandem. And that's hence why we are so excited about what we believe the short, mid, and longer term view for the market in terms of this particular year, 2026, what that outcome could really be. So, with that, Carl, do you have anything else you want to cover?
Nope, that's everything. I think we had a really good in-depth conversation today and kind of exploring our thoughts on the current market versus the future market. And we're going to be looking into more details on Warsh and his policies and see if we can kind of get a leg up going forward. But other than that, if you think anyone out there might enjoy our market commentary, feel free to forward us on over to them. We're also on the iHeartRadio app and the Podbean radio app.
Perfect. Well, with that, then we're going to go ahead and wish everyone a happy upcoming Friday and weekend. And we are definitely going to go ahead and look forward to doing this again next week.